A federal judge in Texas issued a nationwide injunction last week to reverse the FDA's approval of the abortion pill mifepristone. That drug was first approved more than 20 years ago. The U.S. Justice Department is appealing that decision, and Wisconsin Attorney General Josh Call has joined a coalition of states challenging the injunction. Hours after the decision, a federal judge in Washington ruled in a separate lawsuit that the FDA can't pull mifepristone from the market in the 17 states involved in that case. Those include Illinois, Michigan, and Minnesota. The use of the drug for abortions in Wisconsin was already illegal under the 1849 abortion ban that came into effect when the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade last year. The two conflicting decisions make it unclear who will have access to the abortion medication. The issue is expected to end up in the U.S. Supreme Court. I want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What do you think of the judge's ruling that would take mifepristone off the market? Do you think people should have access to the pill? Why? Why not? And what questions do you have about the legal decisions and arguments in these cases? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Susan Liebel is a professor of political science and Warren Research Chair at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
It's great to be here.
We'll spend most of our time on the politics and law, Susan, and you're not a doctor, but can you remind us what mifepristone is and where it fits into the abortion landscape?
Sure. There are two drugs associated with medication abortions. There's misoprostol, and that is also approved by the FDA, and that causes contractions similar to a miscarriage. Mifepristone, which is the drug that's involved in these cases, is a second drug taken in this regimen, and it helps helps with effects like nausea. So the two pills taken together are the most common form of abortion in the United States today, with a majority of abortions being medication abortions.
And medication abortions in states where they remain legal could still happen with that other drug, even in the absence of mifepristone, even though that isn't necessarily the first choice for providers. Do I have that right?
Correct. It would be a much more uncomfortable procedure with more cramping and more pain for the patient, but it is still possible.
Let's get into this ruling now from a judge in Texas. Can you talk about the argument from the plaintiffs challenging the FDA's approval from over two decades ago?
Sure. I mean, this is a very unusual case with a very unusual argument and very unusual language. So normally in a case like this, we would see what we call like AP language, the kind of language that's used by newspapers in an attempt to be fairly neutral. And this usually means relying on terms that are used by, for example, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. What we see in this decision is language from the anti-abortion movement, terms like unborn human, use of the word chemical abortion almost 100 times, or abortionist. So it's unusual in that regard. And also it's unusual as to who brought the case. So normally you need standing to bring a case, which means that, you know, if I don't like a law, I can't just object to it. I have to have some sort of concrete injury. What's unusual about this case is there are no patients who are claiming to have been harmed. It is instead a group of people, a coalition of anti-abortion groups and doctors who are suing the FDA. And they're claiming that the FDA 20 years ago did not adequately review the scientific evidence or follow the protocols when it approved mifepristone in 2000. This is the first time that a court has ever suspended approval of an FDA-approved medication. And if the order goes into effect, it would in fact affect a large number of people.
In theory, a case like this could be filed in any federal court in the entire country. It was filed in this particular court in Texas, guaranteeing it was going to this particular judge. And people have been making a lot out of that. Can you talk about that part of the story?
Yeah, it's called judge shopping, and it's very common.
Mm-hmm.
It's done on both sides. You want to look for a jurisdiction that will be as friendly to your side as possible. So that's why we see the 17 attorneys generals going to the District of Columbia, the Eastern District in Washington State, and we see the coalition of pro-life people going to Texas. Matthew Kaczarek is the only judge in that district covering Amarillo. So he was the perfect shop because rather than it being a rotating number of judges, they knew that it would be only him. They knew that he had very publicly opposed abortion, and they could be pretty certain to have as friendly an audience as possible. So that's why they went there. I don't think we should ever talk about who appointed a judge. I think once judges are federal judges, they are judges. However, both sides do look for friendlier rulings.
Now, we've got this ruling in Texas. As you mentioned, the other ruling that seems to contradict it, at least in part of the country, coming out of Washington. That ruling from Texas stayed until this Friday. What's happening now?
So the judge has stayed his own order in order to give an appeals court the ability to step in. So when two district courts disagree, as they now do, one from Washington State and one from Texas, and it will go to an appeals court, and that increases the likelihood of this rising to the Supreme Court, where when there is disagreement among federal judges, you look to the Supreme Court to settle it.
What we can't predict the future. What kind of things could happen on Friday now? An appeals court could weigh in and do what in the short term?
Well, they can stay this. They can overrule it. They could issue an order. I think I'm not sure that I've adequately said just how unusual this mm-hmm. case is. It's not about which side, but it is also just about elements of the case, the language and this idea of standing. So one thing that the courts could do is very narrowly say, I'm sorry, these people have no concrete harm, so therefore we dismiss with regard to standing. And that would be a way of de-escalating this. It's also possible that this will be decided by the appeals court and then be given a faster track to the Supreme Court.
Talking to Susan Liebel, professor of political science at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, looking at abortion medications, a court ruling, an unusual one, as she points out of a federal court in Texas that would take one of the two main drugs used in abortions, in a medication abortions, off the market. That would go into effect on Friday, but another ruling in Washington state contradicts that, likely to go to some kind of appeals. You can join in with your reactions, your thoughts, your questions about the legal elements here at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Susan, who is appealing this now? Or I guess, what are the various parties getting involved now? The Federal Justice Department, I understand. We've got attorneys general in Democratic attorneys general around the country. Who now is taking this to court? How are they getting involved?
Actually, I haven't read all of that yet. But what we would see would be representatives from both sides making the case to the appeals court. So them looking at these two conflicting orders and making a decision from there.
If this decision stands, goes through the legal process, courts of appeals, the Supreme Court, what would that mean for abortion access to and this particular medication in states around the country? It would just be, I guess, gone?
There is something called enforcement discretion, which allows safe harbor for entities that are technically violating the law, but where enforcement is seen to cause more harm for public health than non-enforcement. So that means that the FDA could announce that it's not going to go after companies that are, you know, technically violating the law by manufacturing and selling mifepristone. As long as they're following what's called the risk evaluation and mitigation strategies, the REMS, and therefore they'd be sort of maintaining the status quo. To be honest, Rob, I would be misleading everybody if I could say what would happen. Sure. I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen. And I think that that is why this case is causing so much consternation.
Sure. One concern that's been raised outside of the abortion issue is, given the unique nature of this, a judge saying the FDA got things wrong in their approval of a medication 2 decades ago, that this could open up challenges to other FDA decisions against any other medication. We've heard this from the Biden administration. What kind of precedent do you think this could lead to?
Oh, it's hard to exaggerate the outlandishness of the case, in that it is saying that anyone who objects to a medication that has been gone through rigorous trials by professionals without any harm, in other words, people with no standing to bring a suit, could just say, well, I speak for people who have been harmed. And there's a very interesting argument going on in the case in which it says, like, well, the women and the girls who have been harmed, they're not here, but that's because they're traumatized and they can't speak to their own concerns. And you know, to my ears, that raises issues of equal citizenship in terms of imagining that women can't bring a lawsuit when they are feeling harm. There's something odd going on there. It would open it up for anyone to challenge any medication. And I also want to underline, Rob, that the people bringing this suit, they are involved in challenging other rulings, specifically medications used for trans people. So even just in this case, what we're seeing is it is not just about medication abortion. And I also want to mention that mifepristone, it is used for miscarriages. Mm-hmm. So it also opens up really serious issues for the women who depend upon that medication after having experienced a miscarriage.
We're talking to Susan Liebel, St. Joseph University political science professor, looking at conflicting legal rulings on the abortion medication mifepristone. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the judge's decision on this pill used in abortions? Do you want to see it taken off the market? Why or why not? What questions do you have about what this all means, how it works in the courts? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Susan Liebel, political science professor at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia. She's with us today to explore the legal future of the abortion pill mifepristone after a federal judge in Texas issued an injunction against the FDA's approval of the drug from 22 years ago. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of this case, the judge's ruling? What do you think the law should say about mifepristone? Who should be able to access it? How should it be used? Do you have questions? Are you confused? If so, understandably, about how all this works in the legal and political system. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Dennis is with us in Two Rivers. Dennis, hi.
Hi, Susan. If I understood correctly, you are faulting us who are against abortions for lifestyle issues. You're faulting us for figuring fetuses are human. If that's accurate, then what are they if they're not human?
Dennis, thanks for the call. I think referring to our conversation earlier, Susan, issues of fetal personhood heavily debated, and the judge's ruling, I think, kind of went in that direction some. Do you have some thoughts on that, Susan?
Well, first, I just want to make clear that regardless of your position on abortion, it's possible to present bad science or false expertise, and it's also possible to make claims about standing that have never been used in American law. So I just want to make very clear that no matter where you stand, you should want the law to be well done, and you should want to follow the approach that many people who oppose abortion have followed. What's important about this decision is that it doesn't do that. So I just want to make clear, this is not about which side you're on. It's simply about how it is that we normally proceed. When we make a test case, test cases are usually clean. The plaintiffs have been injured. The injury is clear. And we don't have that in that case. So it's damaging to the rule of law when we're sloppy about how we bring a case. It's not the argument that we're making. You can make the argument in a more compelling way. That is not actually being done, in my opinion, in this decision and the opinion of other legal experts.
Thanks, Dennis. We'll go to Sherilyn now in Delavan. Sherilyn, hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Sherilyn?
Well, first, the fact that this case was even heard is ridiculous because the plaintiffs have no cause in the case. No one was injured amongst the plaintiffs bringing it. But secondly, I am a scientist. I have sat on FDA advisory committees approving drugs, and I know the rigorous science that these drugs undergo. And it's just unheard of to me that a judge who has no background in science would try to overturn the hundreds of scientists who have weighed in and now the 20 years of experience that has shown that this drug should be on the market and has its uses and purposes. So I'm just appalled that a judge would try to overturn science.
Sherilyn, thanks a lot for the call. Susan, your thoughts?
Well, I think it's a very, very important point that Sherilyn raises about the protocols. And I want to make clear, if I haven't already, that the FDA did not apply its usual protocols. It went beyond its usual protocols. Even though this happened during the Clinton administration, there were a lot of politics in how the scientists were asked to do even more. There's a wonderful infographic available at the New York Times that links to the over 100 scholarly articles that have been written about mifepristone, and there isn't evidence that it is unsafe. So we have to be very careful. We can believe that the fetus is a person, but we can still have to show evidence for mifepristone to be dangerous to pull it from the market.
Sherilyn, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Talking to Susan Liebel, professor of political science at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, looking at this ruling from a federal judge in Texas that would, effective Friday, take this abortion medication, mifepristone, off the market. Appeals in the works, a rival ruling out of the state of Washington. Not entirely clear what's going to happen over the next 2 days. And Susan, between now and Friday, what are you watching for on this?
Well, actually, you know, I've grown increasingly concerned as a nation that we agree on institutions, protocols, some of what Sherilyn was talking about in terms of how we define things. And I think what I'm looking for is our ability as a people to agree about certain kinds of requirements, things like standing. And I think it will be important to understand how conservative justices think. Sandra Day O'Connor was an extremely conservative justice. And whenever a case came to her, she always said, we should decide this as narrowly as possible, not as widely as possible, because as judges, we are not elected and we should move slowly. And so I think in this case, the standing issues would allow any kind of justice to at least pause and say there are issues with standing, let's send it back. And I'm sort of hoping to see that even people who disagree on abortion can agree on the rule of law.
On our concept of the judiciary and looking at it as an institution, we just had this Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin that hinged in many ways on the issue of abortion. The perception that one candidate would almost certainly rule one way and the other candidate would rule the opposite way. Do you worry that the perception in the public is that judges are, the cliche is, politicians in robes?
I do worry about it. I'm actually literally up at night worrying about it all the time. But I think that this the issue of judges is tied to, you know, wider trends in American politics. We have minority rule where we have majorities of people who agree on one side, yet we have gerrymandering, for example, and you're familiar with this in Wisconsin, that can produce what seem like majorities. And with the courts have always been a place where majorities went, minorities went when they felt that they weren't being heard. I think what we've seen over the last decades is the politicization of appointments of judges. We've had the Federalist Society, for example, produce lists of approved judges, and we've seen Republican presidents using those lists. And I think that that has led to a sort of a ramping up of the politicization. And I do worry. I'm not sure about the Wisconsin race. It seems like what ended up happening there was, in a sense, a pulling back of the veil. Politics was already part of the race, and instead it just came out into the open. And I suppose, to be frank, looking at this Supreme Court, this is one of the most political courts there has ever been, and it was produced during strange political manipulations, in that President Obama was not allowed to appoint somebody to the court because of politics, not because of the way the Constitution works. So I worry. I think all of us should take a step back. I think we should do our best to come together as much as we can on the rule of law, on things like what is the evidence for a medication being safe or not safe. Let's agree to what it is, and let's agree that if we've allowed the FDA to be that agency of professionalism, that we should allow that to stand and not make it political.
Susan, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much, Rob.
That's Susan Liebel, political scientist at St. Joseph's University in Philadelphia, with us for a look at a pair of rulings by federal judges in separate cases related to the abortion medication mifepristone.